Hey there, Dark Hearts. Welcome back to Dark Florida, the podcast where the sunshine meets the strange. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and tonight we're talking dolls, not the porcelain kind your grandmother collected. No, we're diving into the world of cursed, haunted, and possibly possessed dolls that have terrified generations. We're starting with Annabelle. Yes, that Annabelle. And what happened after she went on tour that might make you think twice about getting too close. And then we'll circle back to another notorious name you might know. Talk about a Florida legend, Robert the Doll, tucked away in Key West, watching, waiting, unsettling everyone who crosses his path. Before we get into the creepy goodness, just a reminder, if you enjoy this show and want to support what I do, head over to buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. You can also follow the show on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast and subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/darkflorida411. For bonus content and investigation videos. And if you've had a strange encounter or want to be a guest on the show, shoot me an email at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. Get comfortable, turn the lights down low, and maybe keep one eye on that antique doll in the corner. Let's get into it. You might picture a terrifying porcelain doll with a cracked face and cold, staring eyes when you hear the name Annabelle, thanks to the movies. But the real Annabelle? She's actually a plain old Raggedy Ann doll with red yarn hair and a stitched smile. She's not what you'd expect to be at the center of a chilling haunting. But maybe that's what makes this case even creepier. Today, Annabelle is locked inside of a glass case at the now-shuttered Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut, once run by famed paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren. There's a clear warning on the glass: do not touch. But according to the Warrens, she's not just a cursed doll. She's inhabited by an inhuman spirit. Her story begins in the 1970s when a 28-year-old nurse received a doll as a birthday gift from her mother. At first, she placed it on her bed like any other sentimental keepsake. But soon, strange things started happening. The doll would shift positions, crossed legs one moment, then lying on its side the next. Then came the notes. Handwritten messages on parchment paper began appearing around the apartment. They said things like, "Help me," and "Help us." The chilling part? The roommates didn't even own parchment paper. And things escalated quickly. The doll started moving into different rooms on its own. And then one day, it appeared to be leaking what looked like blood. The Warrens, who investigated over 10,000 paranormal cases in their lifetime, believed that something dark had latched onto the doll. Not a ghost, but something far more malevolent. One of the nurse's boyfriends, who was fed up with the mounting chaos, convinced the doll was evil. He finally snapped. He declared that they needed to burn Annabelle. He said, "That thing is not staying here another night." But whatever was attached to the doll wasn't about to let go that easily. The afternoon before they planned to destroy it, the boyfriend dozed off on the couch. What happened next chilled him and everyone else to the bone. He was jolted awake, but it wasn't from a bad dream. It was because he couldn't breathe. His eyes flew open, and there she was, Annabelle, sitting on his chest, staring down at him with that stitched, soulless smile. He said it felt like invisible hands were wrapped around his throat, choking the life out of him. And when he sat up, shaken and gasping for air, he discovered deep, raw scratches clawed into his chest and his upper body, marks that had not been there before he closed his eyes. At first, the women tried to stay rational. Maybe someone was breaking in and playing a twisted prank, moving the doll, leaving messages, even hurting their friends. But after changing the locks and double-checking the windows, the strange occurrences continued. And when they were sure no one else was coming in or out of the apartment, their panic turned to fear. Desperate and not knowing where else to turn, they reached out to a local medium. According to the Occult Museum's records, a seance was held right there in their apartment, and what they discovered only deepened the mystery. The medium claimed to have contacted the spirit of a girl named Annabelle Higgins, a 7-year-old who had lived on the land before the apartment complex was ever built. She died tragically, and her spirit was still tied to the property. Through the medium, Annabelle told the woman that she felt safe with them, that she just wanted to stay, to be loved. Moved by the story, and perhaps a bit too trusting, the roommates gave the spirit permission to inhabit the doll. But instead of peace, things only got worse. One of the nurses, now terrified, sought out another medium, someone more experienced and more renowned. This psychic held a second seance, a deeper ritual probing the energies attached to the doll. She too claimed to contact Annabelle, but this time the story shifted. The child was no longer 7, but 5, and she hadn't lived on the property, but she had been killed in a car accident just outside of the apartment building. Despite these conflicting backstories, the mediums all agreed on one thing. The doll was haunted. But it wasn't until the nurses began treating Annabelle like a real child, bringing her little gifts, dressing her in jewelry and clothes, and even talking to her as if she were alive, that the entity seemed to grow stronger and stranger. Then came the true horror. At night, they began hearing knocking sounds, sharp, deliberate taps that echoed from inside of the walls. Their bedroom lights would flash red, yellow, and orange, flickering across the ceiling like warning flares. The air turned icy without reason. Their beds would shake violently at midnight. And more than once, the doll let out a low, guttural growl. Whatever was inside Annabelle, it was not a lonely child. It was something else entirely. At this point, the women were at their breaking point. Scratches, voices, cold spots, and the doll moving on its own. It was just too much. Fearing for their lives, the nurses reached out to the High Episcopal Church in Hartford, Connecticut. This wasn't just a ghost, they said. It was something far more dangerous. The church, taking the report seriously, referred them to the people who had seen it all, world-renowned demonologists and paranormal investigators, Ed and Lorraine Warren. And that's when Annabelle's story took a truly chilling turn. Once the Warrens arrived, they confirmed their worst fears. When Ed and Lorraine Warren stepped into the apartment, they immediately sensed that something was terribly wrong. It didn't take long before they reached a chilling conclusion. Whatever attached to the doll wasn't a lost little girl at all. It was something demonic, something that had manipulated the young woman by preying on their compassion. The moment they gave the spirit permission to stay, that had opened a door, and that door had invited something dark to walk right in. The spirit manipulated the doll's appearance and movement to create the illusion that it was alive, knowing that recognition was the first step towards power. The Warrens believed that the entity had used the story of Annabelle Higgins as a disguise, a mask to gain their trust. But this wasn't the spirit of a lonely child. It was a calculated deception. With each act of kindness the women offered, each time they treated the doll like it was real, the demon grew stronger. Recognition and belief had given it power. The home, they said, wasn't just haunted, it was infested, a term that the Warrens used for spaces fully overtaken by inhumane forces. And at the heart of it all was the Raggedy Ann doll. Contrary to what many believe, spirits, especially the inhuman kind, don't truly possess objects like dolls or houses. They possess people, but they can attach themselves to places or things, using them as tools. This was what the Warrens classified as the infestation stage, a prelude to possession. It started small, The doll was moved room to room, not by hands, but by teleportation, according to the Warrens. A leg would be crossed, and the doll would be found seated in a different chair or appear somewhere where it couldn't have been placed. Then came those messages, scribbled pleas for help on parchment paper the girls swear they didn't own. That's when they called in the medium, hoping for answers, and that was the real mistake. During that seance, when the spirit spoke and introduced itself as Annabelle Hickens, it played on the girl's empathy. The Warrens believed to be a demonic spirit, one that had no connection to any lost child, had successfully deceived its way into the apartment. It fed on the attention and the energy of the women. The ultimate goal wasn't to haunt the doll, but it was to possess a human host. And according to the Warrens, if things had continued for just a few more weeks, the spirit may have succeeded, possibly harming or even killing someone in the process. That's why the Warrens had to step in. To stop the phenomena from escalating into a full-blown possession, they arranged for a house blessing to be performed by Father Cook. But this wasn't just your typical fire and brimstone exorcism. Ed Warren described it as a wordy 7-page document known as the Episcopal Blessing of the Home. Rather than violently banishing evil, it focused on filling the space with a divine light and positivity, a spiritual reset of sorts. As the priest's voice echoed through the rooms, the air reportedly felt lighter, as though something unseen had finally retreated. With the ritual complete and the lingering sense of relief settling over them, they made the decision to remove the doll from the home entirely. They took the doll with them, knowing its presence had become too dangerous to leave behind. Ed cradled Annabelle in his arms, wrapping her carefully and placing it in the back seat of their car. But he wasn't taking any chances. He insisted on avoiding the interstate. If something was still within the doll, he didn't want to risk it taking it on a highway. His instincts were chillingly correct. Not long into the drive, the calm of the afternoon was shattered. The car began to swerve violently at curves, the power steering locked up, and the brakes failed again and again. Lorraine said the atmosphere in the car became thick with a palpable rage. It was something that didn't want them to leave. After several close calls, Ed reached behind him and rummaged through his bag until he found a small vial of holy water. He turned in his seat, splashed the doll, and made the signs of the cross. Instantly, the vehicle returned to normal. The presence, the hatred, seemed to lift. They made it home in silence, shaken but safe. Back at the Warrens' residence, Ed placed the doll in a chair beside his desk. At first, it sat quietly, but within days, it began to levitate. Then, it disappeared. Over the next several weeks, Annabelle began to move around the house on her own, turning up in places neither Ed nor Lorraine had left her. Even when she was locked in their outer office while they were away, they'd return to find her upstairs, sitting cross-legged in Ed's recliner, like she had been waiting for them. Clergymen who visited the Warrens' home often felt uneasy in her presence, and some will regret crossing her. One afternoon, Father Jason Bradford, a Catholic priest who specialized in exorcisms, stopped by the house. Upon seeing the doll seated in the chair, he picked her up, laughed, and said, "You're just a rag doll, Annabelle. You can't hurt anyone." He tossed the doll back onto the chair. Ed turned to him, stone-faced, saying, quote, "That's one thing you never say." As Father Bradford prepared to leave, Lorraine grew visibly anxious. She urged him to be careful, and she begged him to call when he got home. She had sensed something dark, and she couldn't shake the feeling of looming tragedy. He never made it home. Hours later, Father Bradford called Lorraine from the hospital. His brakes had given out at a busy intersection, and he had been in a violent car accident. His vehicle was totaled, and he barely survived. But he wasn't the last. As incidents stacked up, the Warrens had a special case built to house Annabelle inside their occult museum. It was a cabinet secured with glass, blessed and sealed with protective prayers and sigils. Once enclosed, the doll no longer moved, but her reputation only grew. People came to see her, and some came to challenge her. One day, a young man visited the museum with his girlfriend. As Ed finished recounting the doll's violent history, the man scoffed, walked up to the case, and began banging on the glass. He dared the doll to scratch him, taunted her to prove her power. Ed stepped forward sternly and said, "Son, you need to leave." The couple left on a motorcycle, still laughing and still mocking the doll, but they never made it home. According to the girlfriend who survived but was hospitalized for over a year, they were joking about Annabelle when the young man lost control of the bike. They crashed head-on into a tree and he died instantly. Ed Warren would often use this story as a grave reminder. You don't challenge evil. Because in the Warren's world, no man, no matter how bold or skeptical, is more powerful than what waits in the shadows. Visitors over the years have reported overwhelming dread in her presence. Paranormal investigators and thrill-seeking skeptics alike have brushed up against Annabelle's curse. She may not move like in the movies, but the darkness inside Annabelle, if you believe the Warrens, remains very much alive. And lately, the infamous Annabelle has crept her way back into the headlines, proving that her story is far from over. This time, it's not a film reboot or a dramatized retelling that stirred interest. It's the doll herself. The New England Society for Psychic Research, originally founded by Ed and Lorraine Warren, is now overseeing a new chapter in her journey, a national tour. While exact stops remain a mystery, organizers insist the mission is educational, to share the true stories behind the Warren's most chilling case files, and to remind the public that behind every horror movie icon, there may be a terrifying truth. Annabelle's latest destination? The heart of the French Quarter in New Orleans. She arrived under the cover of darkness, literally. In a now viral TikTok video captured by paranormal investigator Ryan Daniel Buell, the doll is seen being carefully carried down Royal Street, draped in a thick black cloth. She's then placed in a custom-built reinforced case, etched with a cross and sealed with a relic. Quote, "The energy is definitely different here," admitting he quietly recited the Lord's Prayer the entire time he helped move her. For just 2 days, Annabelle was displayed as a part of a limited event hosted by Ghost City Tours, and tickets sold out within hours. Guests were promised a rare chance to come within a foot of the real Annabelle, protected behind glass in what organizers claimed was a tightly controlled, secure setting. But the moment sparked an unsettling question whispered by believers and skeptics alike. If Annabelle is truly as dangerous as the Warrens claimed, why risk moving her at all? After all, Ed and Lorraine went to painstaking lengths to keep her sealed away, confined in a blessed case inside their museum, never to be handled without spiritual protection. And then strange things began to happen. Though organizers have remained tight-lipped, whispers from attendees and locals tell a different story, one of disturbed sleep, emotional unrest, and sudden bouts of an unexplained illness among those who came too close. The atmosphere around her display reportedly grew heavier by the hour. Even seasoned investigators left the exhibit shaken. Whether coincidence or consequence, Annabelle's arrival in New Orleans has stirred something. Something that suggests maybe she should have stayed where she was. Safe, contained, locked behind the glass in the Warren's Museum, far away from the living. Because, as history has shown us, when Annabelle is moved, the line between curiosity and catastrophe begins to blur. Not long after Annabelle made her eerie debut, the city, already steeped in ghost lore and gothic legend, seemed to spiral into a string of inexplicable chaos. First came the jailbreak. Just days after the doll was placed on display, several inmates escaped from a nearby parish jail, prompting an intense manhunt and raising more than just a few eyebrows. Then, almost on cue, one of Louisiana's crown jewels, the historic Nottoway Plantation, suffered a sudden and mysterious fire. Flames engulfed parts of the Grand Antebellum Mansion, leaving behind heavy damage and haunting questions. No clear cause has been determined, but the strange events didn't stop there. Local residents began reporting a wave of unsettling disturbances, flickering lights in homes with no electrical issues, household pets acting aggressively, and strange disembodied noises echoing through the night near the event site. Some who attended the Annabelle exhibition claimed to feel physically drained afterwards, describing an overwhelming sense of dread and unease that lingered long after they'd left. Of course, skeptics were quick to shrug it all off. Superstition, they said, coincidence maybe. But for others, especially those who stood face to face with Annabelle behind that reinforced glass, the timing felt far too precise. One attendee admitted, quote, "I'm not saying Annabelle caused it, but all of this happening at once, it's just too much to ignore," end quote. Social media has since erupted with theories, conspiracies, and digital breadcrumbs. TikTok and Instagram lit up with memes, eyewitness accounts, and even live streams from so-called Annabelle watchers who began tracking her movements across Louisiana. It was part fascination, part fear, and all too real for some. Dr. Elise Darbone, a respected paranormal investigator from the region, weighed in, saying, quote, "Annabelle has a reputation for chaos. Whether you believe in spiritual energy or not, the psychological impact of the proximity to something considered evil, especially an object with this kind of notoriety, is very real. People act differently when they believe that they're in the presence of darkness." Now, Annabelle's tour, ominously dubbed the Devils on the Run Tour, is set to continue through the summer, drawing crowds of horror fans, skeptics, and spiritual thrill seekers alike. Next up on the trip is San Antonio, Texas, Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, followed by Rock Island, Illinois. Whether she brings the storm with her remains to be seen. But if New Orleans is any indication, her presence may stir more than just curiosity. But Annabelle isn't the only infamous doll with a sinister reputation. Far from it. In fact, if you follow the trail of haunted heirlooms, cursed curiosities, many of those twisted tales seem to point right to the Sunshine State, or more precisely, dark Florida, tucked away behind the weathered brick walls of Fort East Martello Museum in Key West, lives another legendary figure in the world of the haunted and the bizarre, Robert the Doll. But don't let his sailor suit and button eyes fool you. This is no ordinary relic. Robert's legacy stretches back over a century, tangled in whispers of voodoo, betrayal, and supernatural vengeance. Visitors of the museum often report strange happenings after merely looking at him in the wrong way, or worse, snapping a photo without permission. Museum staff still receives letters from people all over the world begging Robert for forgiveness after supposedly suffering misfortunes tied to disrespecting the doll. Car accidents, lost jobs, broken relationships, you name it. The lore surrounding him runs deep, and for many, the stories feel all too real. While Annabelle might be grabbing the headlines, Robert holds his ground quietly in the shadows of the Keys, an unsettling reminder that when it comes to haunted dolls, Florida doesn't just have a seat at the table. It might be hosting the whole dinner party. The unsettling tale of Robert the Doll begins in the early 1900s in the balmy, pastel-colored streets of Key West. A young boy named Eugene Robert Otto, simply known as Gene to his friends and family, was gifted a curious handmade doll by a servant who worked in his family's Grand Victorian home. The servant, according to local lore, was skilled in voodoo and may have harbored resentment toward the Otto family. Whether the doll was intended as a harmless toy or something far darker has been debated for over a century. The Otto residence, now famously known as the Artist House, still stands proudly at 534 Eaton Street. Its Queen Anne-style architecture is a fixture of Old Town Key West. It was within those sun-bleached walls, nestled under swaying palms, that Gene's bond with the doll, whom he named Robert, began. At first, it seemed innocent enough. Gene and Robert were inseparable. He dressed the doll in a sailor suit that matched his own, and the two were often spotted seated together at a window overlooking the street below. Jean spoke to Robert constantly, and eerily, some say that Robert spoke back. Then came the first sign that something wasn't quite right. One night, when Jean was just 10 years old, his parents were startled awake by the sound of crashing furniture and their son's panicked screams. Rushing to his room, his mother found the door mysteriously locked. She struggled with the knob, heart pounding, until it finally gave way. Inside, the scene was pure chaos. Furniture overturned, toys scattered, and drawers yanked from their chests. And in the center of the room, Jean, huddled on his bed, was trembling in terror. At the foot of his bed sat Robert the doll, his button eyes fixed forward, almost like he was watching. When asked what happened, Jean's answer chilled everyone in the room. Quote, "Robert did it." And that was only the beginning. No one can say for certain how or why the child's toy, stitched from cloth and stuffed with straw, could stir up such chaos. After all, it was just a doll, wasn't it? But whatever took place that night at young Jean Otto's bedroom was only the beginning. The strange, spine-tingling occurrences kept piling up like waves crashing against the shores of Key West. Jean's parents began to notice something deeply unsettling. They'd hear him upstairs holding full conversations with Robert, and what was most disturbing was that the responses didn't come in Jean's voice. They swore they heard another tone entirely. A different pitch, a different presence. At times, they even claimed to see Robert's expression shift right before their eyes, his once lifeless face twisting into something more, sinister even. And then there were the whispers and shadow people. Neighbors reported seeing the doll scurrying past the upstairs windows or perched eerily in the same spot for hours, his gaze locked onto the street, like he was watching or waiting. As Jean grew into adulthood, Robert remained a constant figure in his life. He eventually returned to the family home with his new wife, Anne, after his parents had passed. But not everyone was thrilled to welcome Robert back. Anne felt uneasy the moment she stepped into the house. She couldn't explain it exactly. Just a deep, bone-level sense that something wasn't right. She begged Jean to lock the doll away, somewhere out of sight and mind. Reluctantly, Jean agreed and placed Robert in the attic, hoping it was enough to ease his wife's nerves. It wasn't long before Robert made it clear he wasn't pleased with his new accommodations. Guests reported hearing footsteps above their head, slow, deliberate pacing, a mischievous giggle echoing through the rafters when no one else was around. And then came the neighborhood children, nervously whispering about Robert staring at them through the upstairs window, even mocking them as they walked by on their way to school. Confused and alarmed, Jean would insist that Robert was locked in the attic. But every time he climbed the creaking stairs to check, he'd find the attic door shut tight. No matter how many times Jean locked the attic door, the result was always the same. Somehow, inexplicably, Robert found his way back to that window, watching, waiting. After Jean Otto passed away in 1974, the house on Eaton Street didn't stay quiet for long. A new family moved in, ready to make a fresh start in the charming old home. Among them was their 10-year-old daughter, who, while exploring the dusty attic one afternoon, stumbled upon something she thought was a treasure. A strange, wide-eyed doll dressed in a sailor suit, she brought him downstairs with the innocent joy only a child could feel. But that joy didn't last long. Shortly after, her laughter turned into midnight screams. Night after night, she woke up terrified, insisting that Robert was moving around her room on his own. She told her parents that the doll would glare at her in the dark, and worse yet, that he wanted to hurt her. Something about him, she said, wasn't right. The girl was so shaken that the family eventually locked Robert back in the attic where they had found him. But the damage had already been done. Many believe that Robert's sinister energy goes all the way back to his origin, specifically to the person who first gifted him to young Jean Otto. The story goes that a Bahamian servant who worked in the Otto household crafted the doll by hand as a gift, but legend has it she was mistreated by Jean's parents, and the doll was her form of revenge. According to local folklore, she infused the doll with dark intent through voodoo and black magic. Could that explain the decades of misfortune and unexplained activity around Robert? Maybe. But if it were just a curse tied to the family, wouldn't it have died with Jean? Strangely, however, it didn't. Whatever force animates Robert seems to have a will of its own, and one that doesn't rest. Today, Robert the doll lives in a secure glass case in Key West. But make no mistake, he's still very much active. Museum staff often report flickering lights, cold spots, and the feeling of being watched. Visitors tell of the overwhelming unease in his presence. And then there's the camera trouble. Time and time again, guests who try to snap a photo without first asking Robert's permission report their devices glitching, refusing to focus, freezing, or even shutting off completely. Some say that their photos were mysteriously erased, but once they leave the museum, the equipment begins to work just fine again. Robert might be behind glass now, but that doesn't mean he's powerless. If anything, the case just gives him a better view of the people he continues to haunt and the sinister energy that seems to cling to him like a shadow. Some whisper it's an ancient curse placed upon him by someone wronged long ago. Others claim it's voodoo, rooted in Caribbean ritual and revenge. And then there's those who believe something even stranger, that Jean Otto, the boy who once adored Robert and carried him everywhere, truly never let go. They say Jean's spirit returned after death and took up residence in the doll that he loved more than anything. At the Fort East Museum in Key West, the staff won't say for certain, but they've seen enough to know something isn't right. Even the museum cats seem to sense it. They stay clear of Robert's glass enclosure. Animals do have a way of sensing what humans often ignore. Visitors, on the other hand, don't always take the legend seriously. Some scoff, rolling their eyes at the stories. They take selfies without permission, tap on the glass, or even laugh at Robert's face. That is when the misfortune starts. Illness, car accidents, lost jobs, broken relationships. It's all documented in the letters, hundreds of them scattered at Robert's feet and pinned to the wall nearby. Each one a handwritten apology from someone who dared to disrespect the doll and believes that they paid the price. Some are desperate pleas for forgiveness. Others simply beg Robert to lift whatever curse that they believe he placed on them. Whether it's black magic or a ghostly attachment, or just the power of belief taken too far. One thing's for sure, Robert the doll doesn't take kindly to being mocked. As I dove deep into the research for this episode, I kept stumbling across the same eerie threads. Countless stories from people who believe that they were cursed by Robert the doll. Page after page, post after post, letter after desperate letter. Some said their cameras stopped working. Others claimed to have lost jobs, gotten sick, or experienced terrifying nightmares after mocking him or snapping a photo without permission. And this wasn't just internet hearsay. I actually know someone I trust, who swears that Robert has cursed them. What started as a lighthearted visit turned into months of bad luck, strange dreams, and an overwhelming sense of dread that just wouldn't go away. Their story shook me, and it made me rethink what I knew about haunted objects. But just when I thought I'd heard the worst of what a doll could do, Annabelle made headlines again. Unlike Robert, who stays in his case at Fort East Martello Museum, Annabelle has hit the road, leaving the relative safety of her home base to go on tour. Her stop in New Orleans sent a chill through the paranormal world. Jailbreaks, fires, unexplained electrical disturbances. Coincidence? Maybe. But for those who know the lore, it felt all too familiar. Because when you start connecting the dots between these two infamous dolls, one nestled in the haunted heat of Key West, the other cloaked in mystery, crisscrossing the country, you begin to wonder, Are we tempting fate? Are we inviting something in? Maybe it's curiosity, maybe it's arrogance, or maybe we've forgotten just how real these legends are. So whether you believe these dolls are cursed, haunted, or just powerful symbols of the human psyche, one thing is clear. Annabelle didn't come to New Orleans quietly. And much like Robert, she leaves behind far more questions than answers. Thank you for tuning in to Dark Florida. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening and share it with your fellow weirdos. It helps the show grow and it keeps the shadows talking. You can support Dark Florida at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida and follow me on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast and subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/darkflorida411. Remember, if you've seen something strange or have a story to share, I want to hear it. Email me at darkflortapodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be kind to the things you don't understand. Thanks for walking with me through the shadows tonight. Until next time, keep your eyes open and your mind sharp. This is Brooke Moreland signing off. Stay curious and stay strange.